1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's your turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Thanks for tuning in. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, visit our website at www.cfif.org. Well, the news out of Florida lately has not been good, but finally, I think there is some good news. It seems that reforms in the state of Florida have been successful. Here to talk more about that with us is William Large. He's the president of the Florida Justice Reform Institute. William, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Renee, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the show.
Well, tell me a little bit about what has happened of late over the last couple years in the state of Florida as it relates to legal reform.
Well, specifically in the context of medical malpractice reform, I think the story really begins in 2003, and that was the year that Governor Bush put together a task force of university presidents and academics to study the problem. And they came up with a report known as the Governor's Task Force on Medical Malpractice Reform and gave it to Governor Bush, and he implemented those reforms after some effort. It took one regular session and three special sessions to get something through the process. And I had the privilege of serving as the executive director of the governor's task force in medical malpractice reform and worked very closely with the governor during that period of time. What we saw is really a series of reforms that were passed. And I think if you were to talk to most people, one of the things that they remember most about that is a cap on non-economic damages. And it was based on the California model, which is a micro model, which has a $250,000 cap on non-economic damages. But the Florida legislature knew that Florida had different concerns and different issues and developed a different tiered cap depending upon whether the individual health care provider was an individual physician or an actual licensee holder, and depending on whether it was an entity such as a professional association or a hospital. So it got a little bit more complicated. From there, the reforms went into place, and one of the things you have to remember about medical malpractice cases is they take a long time to sort of work their way through the system. In other words, the average lifespan of a medical malpractice case might be as long as 2.5, 3, or 3.5 years on a civil docket, and that has a lot to do with the caseload. A lot of our courts are overburdened with both criminal and civil cases, and it takes a while for a complex case to actually be litigated. As a result, a lot of the constitutional issues that are out there as a result of the 2003 reforms, we're really beginning to see them ruled upon right now in our courts, both in our circuit courts or the trial courts, and beginning to see them percolate up to our district courts of appeal. So a lot of the reforms that took place in 2003, which came out of the legislative process, are now beginning to have a sort of a look over by another branch of government, the judicial branch. And so a lot of the different circuit courts around the state are having challenges on a whole host of issues, and it's probably going to take some time for the dispositive ruling, which would come from the Florida Supreme Court, on these reforms to take place sometime in the future.
So the reforms being successful may be short-lived, but we should enjoy them while we have them. Certainly. I mean, we're hopeful, I would assume, that the courts will continue to uphold the constitutionality of these reforms.
Well, it's not so much that they're short-lived as a part of any equation of legal reform that's passed by the legislature is, you know, a final dispositive ruling by the Florida Supreme Court. So we're not as in a position as we sit here today in 2007 that a lot of the reforms have actually been ruled upon, including the cap on non-economic damages. What we are seeing is a lot of circuit courts upholding the provisions in the 2003 reforms, and we're seeing other circuit courts, or again, the trial courts, finding some provisions of the 2003 reforms unconstitutional. So we're going to see, I think, a lot of litigation on the constitutionality of the reforms in the future. So at such time that we get a dispositive ruling from the Florida Supreme Court, I think you're really going to see an answer here, because one of the things that I think a lot of health care providers, a lot of insurance companies out there, and folks that insure, whether self-insured or insure health care providers, is will the constitutionality of these reforms be upheld? And if they are, I think what you'll see is cost savings passed on to health care providers. If they're not, I think you'll see primarily actuaries reevaluate products. And one of the things that I'm proud of is that what we've seen since 2003 is actually the frequency of cases or lawsuits have gone down, and frequency meaning the number of cases. Now, the severity of the cases continues to increase slightly. When I use the term severity, I mean sort of the magnitude or the import of the alleged damages. There's still a medical malpractice case is still considered a big case, a complex case with significant damages. I think as a result of these reforms, we're seeing that the frequency has gone down, though. We're not seeing as many cases, and we're getting those reports from both the plaintiff's bar and the defense bar.
Interestingly, William, I was at a hospital function this weekend and was talking with one of the doctors about, you know, the work that I do in helping to advocate for medical malpractice reform and other versions of legal reform, and he said finally that he saw a reduction in his medical malpractice premium, and he attributed it exclusively to the 2003 reforms. So folks are getting the message. But let's take it one step further. Obviously, it may spell a savings for some of the doctors, which may ultimately mean that we will stop the flow of doctors leaving the state of Florida. Maybe we'll be able to get some to come back to the state of Florida, since they may be able to afford the insurance here and be able to practice here again. But what else does it mean for the average American consumer here in the state of Florida for these legal reforms to be effective?
Well, I want to answer your question in two parts. Number one, the issue of physicians leaving the state of Florida. That was a rather controversial issue in 2003, and there were Senate hearings on the issue. And what we eventually found, it was very difficult to pin down the phenomenon of doctors leaving the state. Instead, what I think you saw is a lot of physicians still staying in the state, but not engaging in high-risk procedures or on-call procedures with respect to hospitals. I think their actual behavior was changing at that period of time in terms of what type of cases they would take versus actually leaving the state. One of the things that's interesting, if you're a licensed doctor in Florida, you're going to retain your license, and it would tell you that the doctor's still in the state, but what it doesn't tell you is what is the doctor doing differently. Is he now no longer going to the emergency room for on-call procedures? Are there certain procedures that he's refusing to do? So it's very complex and complicated to sort of pin down the phenomenon of physicians leaving the state.
Well, I can tell you firsthand that I was well aware of a lot of docs who reduced their medical malpractice coverage or just went what they call bare. You know, they went without because they simply could not afford, and they'd put a notice up in their practice, you know, I've gone bare, I'm without medical malpractice insurance. And, you know, it was in response to, you know, the outrageous amounts that a lot of them, particularly as you mentioned, the subspecialties that do, you know, the neurosurgeons and the orthopedic surgeons and the obstetricians who deliver the baby, some of the high-risk surgeries, they just couldn't afford. It was either, like you said, it was either they were going to have to change the way that they practiced, or they were going to have to stop practicing altogether. So that's interesting. All right, what's the second part of your answer?
The second part of the answer is, I believe those cost savings can be passed on to end consumers. Now, with that said, there's really only one type of person that can really opine in a, I think, dispositive manner about those savings, and that is an actuary that actually works for a company that insures healthcare providers in terms of the amount of those savings. Intuitively, it makes sense. And intuitively, I know that there will be cost savings. But in terms of an actual dollar amount, I would have to defer to an actuary on that. And that was another complicated issue. But from there, I want to also touch base with you on the aspect that you just mentioned about physicians going bare. I was a former, in another lifetime, was an attorney that represented primarily hospitals and physicians in medical malpractice cases. And I would strongly, strongly recommend that physicians have medical malpractice insurance.
Absolutely.
So the phenomenon of a physician going bare is not a good thing. And what we want to do is cultivate an environment where physicians can find affordable health insurance, medical malpractice insurance. Because one of the things that we obviously realize medical malpractice insurance is used for is in the civil context in cases of medical malpractice cases. But likewise, there's a series of administrative remedies under Chapter 120 that could implicate concerns with respect to a physician's license. So at the end of the day, we want a culture where physicians can afford medical malpractice insurance, and that product is available to them. So I think that's really the big picture hope with a lot of the reforms, is that medical malpractice insurance is affordable. So for those physicians that were going bare, I'm very much aware of that phenomenon, and I believe it is a tragic consequence of the medical malpractice phenomenon, because you do not want a situation where the truly injured people do not have insurance, or there's not medical malpractice insurance available. What you want is a situation where, in a medical malpractice case, that coverage is available for the actual defense of the case, and if there is indeed a real injury, that there is potential coverage there. Now, what I would say about medical malpractice cases, which makes them very difficult to understand, is people use the term a lot, frivolous lawsuits. That's a term that I do not like to use. Because most medical malpractice cases actually universally involve individuals with damages. The question is whether there has been a breach of the appropriate standard of care which led to those damages. In other words, was there actual negligence? And that really becomes a debatable issue in a medical malpractice case. But there are usually folks who are very sympathetic and have had a adverse outcome, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the victim of medical malpractice. Just the state of affairs with medicine today is that not everyone that walks into a physician's office or into a hospital are necessarily always going to have a good outcome, and when people have a bad outcome, that does not mean that medical malpractice occurred. So a lot of cases that are filed have severe damages associated with them, and that's why the insurance product is necessary, so that physicians have the ability to provide a defense, so that there is a defense to argue other issues such as duty and breach of duty and causation.
Well, William, I need to take a short break, but what I want to do when we come back is I want to take this one step further, because we've been talking a lot about the impact that it may have on the physician, on the physician's medical malpractice, the impact that it will have on the patient, the consumer of the healthcare industry. But I want to take, the web a little bit further out, because I want to talk about the tie that there is between American businesses, some of the listeners out there who may own their own large or small business, the impact that healthcare and American business have as it relates to the things that we've learned in the legal reform movement. And we're going to talk about a study by the American Justice Partnership called Medical Crisis, a Pocketbook Matter for Employers. And just to set this up a little bit more for when we come back from the break, in the foreword by John Engler, who's the president of the National Association of Manufacturers. He's also the former governor of my home state, my birth state, the state of Michigan. He says that one of the critical lessons learned in the legal reform movement over the past decade is that American business and healthcare are inextricably linked. The health and vitality of industry depends on cost-effective delivery of and patient access to quality healthcare. And William, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about this study, how it relates to the state of Florida, and whether it spells good or bad news for businesses here in and around the state of Florida. So we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with William Large. He's the president of the Florida Justice Reform Institute. William, before we go into the study by the American Justice Partnership called Medical Crisis, a Pocketbook Matter for Employers, I did want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about the Florida Justice Reform Institute and how people can learn more about it.
The Florida Justice Reform Institute is a not-for-profit organization in Florida dedicated to civil justice reform. Some people sometimes refer to that as tort reform. And in sum, it's an organization of some small businesses, some bigger businesses, and associations here in Florida designed to really look at the way civil litigation is practiced and look for potential answers through legislation and promoting fair and equitable legal practices around the state. And to facilitate those goals, we employ research and we employ advocacy and meaning in support of meaningful civil justice reform.
And if someone is seated at a computer, can you give out the website address?
Yeah, it's www.fljustice.org.
Okay, that's for the Florida Justice Reform Institute, www.fljustice.org. If you are at your computer, go ahead and pull up another website that I want to give out. It's the AmericanJusticePartnership.org, AmericanJusticePartnership.org. The Florida Justice Reform Institute, as is the Center for Individual Freedom, partners in the American Justice Partnership organization, and they have a brand new study up there. It's called Medical Crisis, a Pocketbook Matter for Employers. And as we mentioned, this is a study that they've done looking at the good and the bad and some of the in-between as it relates to healthcare costs and medical liabilities and what happens and what it means for the consumer as well as for the employer who very often pays for those services. William, can you give us just a minute summary or snapshot of this report that they've done, the Pocketbook Matter for Employers?
Sure. It's a pretty in-depth report, and I think that the summary that you gave in the beginning is excellent. And the report has got a foreword by Governor John Engler. And I think the big picture that he's trying to talk about is there's, you know, a hand-in-glove symbiotic relationship between business and the effect that our economy has with respect to business and healthcare costs. They're intertwined and they're interrelated. And that business needs to be very concerned with all aspects of healthcare, including the liability environment, and that it's incumbent on business leaders, both big and small, to examine very carefully, you know, what is going on in Florida and other states with respect to legal liability issues with respect to healthcare.
And what's interesting, I know some of our listeners aren't just here in the state of Florida, but they do have charts that show America's medical liability crisis. It's a national view, and it relates, and Florida still remains in the red as a crisis state. Some of our surrounding states, some of the listeners, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, you're in the caution area. Louisiana is a little more in the stable environment, as is Texas, which is one of the states that really was the focus of the study. Texas, where there's good news, and Pennsylvania, where there's bad news. Let me put this in a little more perspective. In the preface of the piece, the American Justice Partnership reports that according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Even simple reforms would save $60 to $108 billion in health care costs each year. These savings would lower the cost of health insurance for employers and enable an additional 2.4 to 4.3 million Americans to obtain insurance. So when we talk about medical malpractice reform, when we've been talking about this, when you look at the Florida Justice Reform Institute's website, the American Justice Partnership's website, we're not just talking about the impact that it could have on physicians and their patients. Maybe you're not, you know, a consumer regularly of healthcare, but it could have an ultimate impact on your pocketbook, certainly as it relates to healthcare costs. And of course, if you are an employer, there is a great tie between, you know, the success and failure for the healthcare delivery and the costs as it relates to the employer's cost for healthcare insurance. We've only got a couple minutes left, William. Can you give us a snapshot of what might be happening, if anything, you think this next legislative term here in the state of Florida as it relates to legal reform, medical malpractice reform?
I think in terms of medical malpractice reform, what you're going to see is probably a lot of stakeholder groups waiting for rulings with respect to the constitutionality of a lot of the 2003 reforms. For those of us involved in the 2003 session, that was a pretty divisive and controversial session. I suspect that no one really wants to or has the stomach to revisit those reforms until, for some reason, they're ruled on in some dispositive manner. So, for example, if something was ruled constitutional, maybe a stakeholder group would want to bring some legislation. If something was ruled unconstitutional, perhaps another stakeholder group would want a new legislative product to be introduced. But I don't think you're going to see anything huge on that aspect with respect to the 2003 reforms. I do know that there is a move underfoot, which makes a lot of sense, to provide some type of immunity or to provide some type of protection for emergency room healthcare providers in the regard that they are a group of individuals that have to, by law, both federal and state law, see everyone that walks into the door, per se, at a hospital in an emergency situation. And oftentimes there's no existing relationship with the patient and the healthcare provider, and it's very difficult to get a patient history and other information, and a lot of times there are liability issues involved, and I know that a lot of those healthcare providers will be seeking some type of protection and some type of immunity with respect to potential liability lawsuits. But the other issues that are out there, I think you're going to see issues with respect to actually workers' compensation reform. There's actually a big, going to be a big case on appeal in front of the Florida Supreme Court on that issue, and we'll see whether or not that will necessitate any type of legislative reforms.
All right, William, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. Thanks so much for joining us. William Large with the Florida Justice Reform Institute. We'll be right back after this break.